Last week, we began a series about prophecies and promises, specifically looking at some writings in the Old Testament and how the prophets of God foretold, in a lot of cases, things that were to happen, telling in advance the things that God was going to do. But not every prophecy works that way. Sometimes the prophets aren't foretelling, they are forthtelling, speaking about the things that God is doing in their time, or of God's nature, speaking of who God is. And today in this reading from Isaiah, we see Isaiah forthtelling, painting a scene at the throne of God and Isaiah's reaction to what he saw and then subsequent call as prophet. The fascinating text, Isaiah 6, 1 through 8. And it begins with these words: in the year that King Uzziah died. And those are words that do two things, actually. They set the kind of timeline for when this took place. I like to hear a story and like know when it happened, or like try to put the kind of put it in, where does it fit in a timeline? So, you know, a story that has no connection, or, you know, I don't know when that took place. I like to have, you know, something that it anchors to, and that it does that. Because we have a year. It's the year that this king died. Now, it also does another thing. It sets the context for when Isaiah saw this, and that was a difficult year for Judah. This is a time when the kingdom was divided. So there was Israel in the north and Judah in the south, and this was a good king. It's not just any king. This is a good king. And he was prosperous, and the economy was doing well when he was the king, and everybody was, you know, feeling pretty good. National identity, right? Feeling good. We're Judah. We got a good king. And then he died. And so the question that comes up when the king has died is, now what? Who are we? Where are we going? What's going to happen next? Which has actually put some significance later in the text when Isaiah says, I've seen the king. So there are two kings in this text, one who has died and one who is the real deal. The real king, the powerful one, the one who's glorified. So that puts us in the context of from going, what's next, to, oh, you know what? What's next is God still reigns, and that's good. And that's part of what Isaiah sees. But this text begins really with the revelation of holiness. That's the first part of what we see, just digging into. It sets the context with the year, in the year King Uzziah died, and then the revelation of God's holiness follows. What's the most incredible thing you've ever seen? Just think for a moment. Even close your eyes and just like visualize the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. You've probably seen some incredible things. Picture like the most unbelievable sunset that you've ever seen. Did anybody think of a sunset? Yeah, I mean, sunsets are pretty incredible. We see some sunsets where the sky is painted all these colors, and, you know, there's some, like, really deep, rich color in the sky, and there's oranges and pinks and red and just incredible, and there's colors you don't expect sometimes, you know, with the clouds and whatever, and, like, refraction and stuff going on. It's like, wow, God used the whole palette, right, and just painted the sky, and unbelievable how gorgeous, and you just want to, like, capture it. And even if you take the picture and you look at it later and you go, this is horrible, it doesn't even compare, right? This whatever camera that you use doesn't have enough color, there's not enough depth in it. You just, you know, you lose the whole experience, because then it's just a two-dimensional, you can't really put yourself into the scene and have that whole, you know, encircled feeling that maybe that sunset did. And those are incredible. Maybe, you know, I can think of a thing that happened 21 years and 3 days ago. Yeah. Because it was May 24th in 1997 that I was standing about here at the front of a church And it was a Saturday afternoon. And the doors opened, and this girl came through the doors. My bride. She's right over there. And she's kind of blushing, I think. Right? I wish I had a picture of that from where I was standing going back the aisle, but the photographer was back there with her. Because I can still remember what that was like. And my cheeks got tired. I was smiling so much as she came. It was a longer aisle than this. And it just, like, come on, get here. You know? Like, let's go. We're doing this. Right? Incredible. It was, you know, a moment that captured in my memory, and like I remember the whole thing, not just what I saw, but just everything else, who was nearby, and what it felt like, and the terrible color of the carpet in that church. I remember all of that, but what I mostly remember is the moment. Or maybe for parents, you remember like the birth of, especially the first child, but every child, right? And that moment of birth, and this is a little living person, right? And now my life is different. And the doctor holds up that baby, and it's covered in gooey stuff, and it looks nasty. But you're like, wow, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It is. I mean, not in emotional ways, right? In other ways than the actual sight of this goo-covered screaming thing that just totally changed your whole life. But this is a beautiful thing. This is a significant thing. Or maybe you've seen, like, the power of, like, a thunderstorm. We don't have a lot of thunderstorms, lightning storms around here. But I remember when we lived in Oklahoma, we'd get the lightning strikes and the thunder would rattle the windows. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. And like the lightning that just lit up the whole sky. And I remember when I lived in northern Indiana going out, because the whole sky was like flashing and lighting up. And I didn't know why. So I drove out, and over Lake Michigan, there was this giant cloud, and there was inside the cloud lightning. It wasn't reaching the ground or the lake or anything. It was just flashing back and forth in this cloud. And the whole thing was just all, you know, just almost constant flashing of lightning in this cloud. It was unbelievable power within that. Or maybe the power of raging flood waters and just watching the water that just can carry away everything in its path. Those are things that come into my head about life-changing and incredible and powerful things that I've seen. But what are some of yours? I'm actually asking, so feel free. Ray. You flew over an erupting volcano. I hope you were pretty good altitude. Wow. Wow. No, it doesn't. Wow, that's awesome. An erupting volcano. So the like lava flow pictures of what's going on in Hawaii right now, and you're like, yeah, that's no big deal, though. Like, ash and lava and rocks and stuff flying out of this thing right at our plane. Okay, maybe a little higher would be good. Wow, that's cool. What else? Tom. Right, the disaster, but at the same time, this, like, kind of, you know, inspiring, like, awe-creating, not in a, yay, this is great way, but, like, the power and the, you know, like, devastation. Yeah, wow. See, so if you couldn't hear Tom, flying over the Northwest when there was wildfires going on. Yeah, Glenn. Wow. Very good. Yeah, I'm sure. Coming home, especially after being away and in the situation that that was for you, and to be, okay, I'm home, finally. Yeah, coming back from war. And Memorial Day is a good weekend to remember that. And yeah, I'm sure there was some cheers and applause, and everybody was like, yeah, we're finally back. That's good. That's good. So Isaiah has this vision, and he sees something that's incredibly life-changing. It changes his whole perspective on the loss of the king and of everything that was going on. Isaiah had a vision of God's glory. Now, I put a picture up on the screen of like the sky with like this glorious kind of image to it. What I would love to have is a picture of what Isaiah really experienced and what he saw, but we don't have any photos of that. Isaiah didn't capture that in a photo, but he did create a picture for us. So in the picture that's here, we have to zoom way in because Isaiah wasn't seeing this from a distance, and wow, that's spectacular. Zoom all the way in, all the way right up to like the throne of God, and he's right there seeing the glory and the holiness of God. This is what it says in Isaiah chapter 6, beginning in the middle of verse 1, after the thing about the king. I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up. And the train of his robe filled the temple. And it goes on to describe it this way. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had six wings. And I'm going to interrupt our text right there and tell you something that English translations don't tell you. In the Hebrew, the words six wings are repeated there. And English translations typically leave that out. And I had a professor at the seminary who was like, this is one of those things that English translations often do. And it's kind of a mistake. Like, it's there. Why don't we translate it? And this is how he said it should read. Each had six wings. Six wings! Like, that's why it's repeated, because it's spectacular. We lose that because we go, each had six wings, and we read on, that there's two covering the face and the feet and two flying. But it's like, wow, kind of moment, right? So each had six wings, six wings. And then there's two covering the face, two cover the feet, and with two he flew. And one called to another and said, holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. There's repetition we leave in the text. Why we take the earlier one out, I don't know. Holy is the Lord of hosts. Hosts there is like the angel army. There's a song that's a fairly recent, Chris Tomlin, I think, did it, the God of Angel Armies. This is the Lord of hosts, okay? This is what hosts means here. This is not like the person that greets you when you come to the restaurant. This is the angel army, the ones ready for battle here. Holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory, and the foundations of the thresholds shook at the voice of him who called. It was like that thunder in Oklahoma. It's rattling the whole building. And the whole house was filled with smoke. And that's where it ends. And I'm like, Isaiah, I bet there's a lot more that you could say, right? There's a lot more words, but the reality is, the glory of God is revealed in this, and words likely fall short of the full experience. Even if Isaiah had gone on and on and on, it would be still limited to our understanding and what we can capture in human language. And it really goes beyond that. It goes beyond that, and what we can agree on, I think, is that God's holiness exceeds our understanding. That the holiness of God goes beyond what we can even really imagine. The earth is full of his glory, the text says, but the world really doesn't get it. The world misses it completely, the holiness of God. See, some people see a God who looks a little bit like Santa Claus, who delivers gifts, really whether you're naughty or nice, Santa still comes and gives us stuff. And this is how some people perceive who God really is, or a God who kind of just maybe looks away or giggles at the things we do wrong. Is that who God is? Or maybe a God who accepts everyone just the way they are, who doesn't care to change or need to change any of us. We tend to look at God in the favorable ways, the gracious ways that God is, and maybe not so much the holiness of God. But when we look at the holiness of God, it makes us question these interpretations or these ideas. Is God a God who gives everything and never expects anything? Or is God a God who, our God, is he a God who accepts people no matter how they arrive at him and sees one way of getting to God as valuable and as good as any other way? And so any religion, any path, anything you believe is just fine. Is that who God is? Or a God so kind that he's going to let everyone into his kingdom and the doors are wide open? Now, some of these things are actually kind of true. Our God is merciful. He is slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. That's true. But our God is also holy. And the holiness of God and the purity of God and the perfection of God is something that we often maybe try to contain and somewhat minimize and lose track of and lose the emphasis and the impact of. God is holy, and if we miss that point, the whole gospel starts to get chipped away. Because how merciful is our God if he cannot demand absolute perfection? And in his holiness, he has that right. God wants us to be holy, to be perfect, to be pure, to be sinless. And realistically, the reality is that the only time an attribute of God is repeated three times is right here in this text. And 7 out of every 12 times God's name is said in the Old Testament, the word holy is connected to it. 7 out of 12. So is there something that the Old Testament and the Bible is emphasizing and the prophets are sharing and is repeated? And in the Hebrew language, repetition is for emphasis. So when it says holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts, there's deep meaning there. Our God is holy. Holiness means he's set apart, that he is transcendent, that he's true, that he's pure, that he's right, that he's perfect. In light of the holiness comes the realization of sinfulness. And that's what happens for Isaiah. He has this vision. He's right there. And how does he respond? He gets the realization of his own sinfulness in the light of the holiness and the glory of God. Isaiah reflects instantly on his own failure, because sinners cannot be in the presence of God. God does not tolerate sin. God does not tolerate sin. That's why if we rewind all the way back into Genesis chapter 3, and we'll do that in a couple of weeks, that Adam and Eve were banished from the garden because of their disobedience. That's why death enters the picture, because of sin. In Exodus chapter 24, there's like one really rare exception where Moses and Aaron and 70 elders, and they go up into the mountain and they like have this intimate connection and like have a meal with God kind of moment. And it's like the only exception that there is. And it's still probably not quite to what Isaiah got to see. Now, it's a vision that Isaiah has, right? So it's not, it's like he saw, and it's believed that this is like a vision, okay? So in a prophetic way, he had this experience. Moses, later, after Exodus 24, has this request. He's like, you know, God, I really want to see your glory. Reveal your glory to me. And God's like, you can't handle that. So here's what we'll do. I'll hide you in the rock. I'll put my hand over you, and I'll pass by, and then I'll take away my hand, and you can see my backside. is kind of how it goes. So he gets a glimpse, kind of a hint at the glory of God, but he doesn't get the full-on picture. Why? Because God cannot tolerate sin, and sinners can't be in the presence of a holy God. We couldn't be there. It wouldn't work. Have you ever had one of those, oh, no, kind of moments? You can insert another word for no if you want. Oh, moments. Almost a year ago, I was riding my bike right up on a road that's right up here. And I had one of those moments. Because I knew that I was not going to stay upright. You ever have one of those moments where it's like time has frozen? And you can process, like, in an instant all these, like, all this information. And it's like, so this is what happened. I was riding along, and I was trying to avoid these bump strip things that were on the road that were designed to slow cars down. And they were horrible for a cyclist. So I was going to go between them, but between this one, the last set, I was almost through. There was three of them, and I made it through the first two. It was great. Got to the last one, and there's a metal plate in the middle of the road and loose gravel on top of the metal plate. And so I got there, and I saw it a little late, and I, like, on the brakes, and I'm trying to, like, I turned to try to avoid it. Mistake, because as soon as my wheel was on the loose gravel on the metal plate, then it was 90 degrees. And then time stopped. My wheel's at 90 degrees. This, like, all these thoughts are going through my head. This doesn't work. I don't think I'm going to stay upright here. Oh, no. There may have been another word that went through my mind. Well, okay. I guess I'm going to crash. Like, all of this is going through my head. Maybe you've had that kind of moment. Maybe it's like you know the impact is about to happen, right? Maybe you can, like, if you've been in a car accident, maybe you know what I'm talking about. Like, where time is suddenly, everything slows down. And all these thoughts can go through your head all at once, and you're just processing, like, your brain just goes through, and you know what's going to happen, and you're bracing yourself for an impact that is literally just moments, fractions of a second away, and yet you know all of this, right? And I have this distinct recollection of looking down and seeing my handlebars like 90 degrees, and I know I'm going to crash, and I'm like, go through all of these thoughts. And there's nothing I can do at all. That's what Isaiah had. That's the kind of moment. In the presence of God, we would all have that same kind of moment because each of us is guilty. Isaiah was guilty. Chapter 5 in Isaiah, if you flip back into chapter 5, we'd see like six times he's pointing out the errors and the sins of other people and saying, woe to you because of this, and woe to this whole situation, and woe because of, like, six times, and pointing out as God's prophet, speaking the truth and the law about other people, and he gets to this moment and he's like, woe is me. That's his oh no moment. Woe is me. Because I'm going to crash and there's nothing I can do about it. I am undone. There's nothing I can do about it. It's confession that he makes, but also the realization of his own sinfulness. We're just as guilty as Isaiah, and it would probably be easier for us to picture unclean hands instead of unclean lips. That's the confession Isaiah makes. Woe to me, I'm a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. If it was our confession, we might say, woe to me, I'm unclean. My hands are dirty. Go forward into the New Testament at the crucifixion of Jesus, and Pilate comes out with the water and he washes his hands in this symbolic way to say, my hands are clean of this. For us, we would realize in the presence of God and against his holiness, we see our own sinfulness, and we're sinful and unclean people, and we live among people who are also sinful and unclean. That's our reality. And there's nothing we can do about it that we ourselves can do to accomplish or overcome or to take away our own sins or our own sinfulness. We're just as guilty. In light of the holiness of God, Isaiah's confession is, I am undone. It's like I'm coming apart at the seams. Isaiah is expecting that his life is over. He has seen the glory and the majesty and the holiness of God, and he has guilt on his lips. He is done. And in that moment, just immediately after the realization of sinfulness comes the renewal of forgiveness. So there I was with my handlebars 90 degrees and I knew I was going to crash. Imagine if there was some way that instead of this, my handlebars turn, my bike is kept upright, and I ride on. That'd be something, right? That'd be incredible. That's kind of like it was for Isaiah. There's forgiveness. One of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for. He's brought back upright. He's put back on the path. He's forgiven. The tongs from the coal from the altar, it's scholars look at this and believe this is like the altar of incense where sacrifices are made, so it's like there's an atonement in this scene. So it's a temple place, okay? So it's not just any coal from any place. This is a specific place. And the seraphim, it's a torchbearer light is connected into the name of this angelic being. And so the coal and the whole scene, what we need to focus on isn't the coal and the lips. Even though this is Isaiah's confession, I'm a man of unclean lips. Where does the coal go? It goes to his lips. So there's a connection there, but the words really to recognize in there, your guilt is taken away, your sin atoned for. And that is the message. Isaiah was forgiven. And we are forgiven by God's grace. We're forgiven by the grace of God. This has touched your lips. The purifying, sin-cleansing blood of Jesus touches our lips, and as we receive the Lord's Supper, it will touch our lips. And our guilt will be taken away, and our sin atoned for by the blood shed on the cross, by the one who is the Lord Himself, the glory of God, the holiness of God in the person of Jesus. Your guilt is taken away. Your sin is atoned for. And so we go from woe is me to wow, I'm free. We're free of that guilt that would make us confess with Isaiah that we are undone and that we are crashing up against the glory and the holiness of God. And instead of that guilt, we have the freedom of forgiveness. The renewal that it brings. Because the grace of God washes over us and the Spirit of God touches our hearts. In the text, we go from cleansing to calling. And it's immediate. It's actually striking. This whole thing is 8 verses long. And Isaiah spends a couple of verses talking about the holiness and the glory of God, and then he goes to his confession, and then immediately to the atonement and the forgiveness that he receives. And what's next? His calling. Verse 8 from Isaiah 6. I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, here I am, send me. So Isaiah is forgiven and then called. Forgiven of his sin and then called into service. Isaiah was sent as a prophet to God's people. And there's cleansing, and there's calling, and there's commitment, all within a very short time in these verses, a short section here. Verse 9, moving on from the text that we heard read, God said to Isaiah then, go and say to this people. It's Isaiah's call into being a prophet. Go and say to this people. Now, not everything that Isaiah was told to say was all good news, right? The voice of the prophet wasn't always going out and saying, God is gracious and God is merciful. Isaiah got to say things like, well, be seeing but not perceiving, be hearing but not understanding. Isaiah got to deliver some deep and serious law to the people of God, reminding them that they should rely on God alone, calling them back from things that had distracted and divided and persuaded and tempted them. But Isaiah also got to announce God's grace and mercy. Isaiah got to foresee the birth of Jesus, born of the virgin. It's in Isaiah chapter 7. He got to foresee the death of Jesus, and Isaiah 53 is about the suffering servant. Isaiah got to foresee a vineyard restored, God's creation being put back together and put back in order. And Isaiah got to see and then express all of these things as God's prophet. A significant role. In his context and in ours, people need to know God's holiness and grace. People need to know God's holiness and grace. They need to hear his law and gospel. They need to understand, yes, the truth of Jesus' love for them, but the depth of that truth is only fully understood when we understand the holiness and glory and majesty and perfection of our God. Then we can treasure the death of Jesus, forgiving and atoning and covering our sin because we understand the holiness of the Lord. And people need to hear that. They need to know that. There are people around us that need that, information, that need to understand who God is for them. And they need the whole picture. And God says this, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Now, maybe it's to the other side of the world, and we're glad we got Kip and Ivy who do that. But maybe it's to people next door, because they need Jesus too. We've been talking about gathering neighbors and connecting with people who are around us in our neighborhoods and being missionaries to where we live and work and go to school and where we are. Whom shall I send and who will go for us? Let's respond with Isaiah. Here I am. Send me. Maybe that's to stand in front of a bunch of people and tell them this is what God says, and to be like a modern day Isaiah, kind of a prophet that calls people back from all of the places where they've gone. Or maybe it's to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody you already know and care about. And both are valuable, and both make a difference, and everything in between. How do you respond? Let's respond with Isaiah. Here I am, send me. Use me. Use what I have. Use the talents you've given me. Use me, Lord, to do your will. Like I mentioned, we're having a gathering at our house today. Will you keep us in prayer sometime around 5 o'clock into the evening? Just pray that we can connect with some people, our neighbors, so we move beyond this relationship. And then maybe do the same. Gather neighbors, speak to friends. Let's tell them about the God that we know, a God of holiness and a God of love, a God of perfection and a God who makes us perfect, a Lord of glory who gives us forgiveness. And we'll finish with a question that we've been asking for the last month or so. What insight did we receive from God's word today? And how can we put into action this week, especially for the good of others? Amen.